This is All of It. I'm Kushan Avidar in for Allison Stewart. And for our show today, we're revisiting conversations that I've previously guest hosted here on the show while keeping Allison's chair warm, including conversations from last summer and some more recent interviews. Now let's turn to a film that explores the potential effects of an alien invasion on Earth through the lens of two teenagers falling for one another. Aw. It's titled Landscape with Invisible Hand. The film is set in the near future, after an alien species known as the Vov signs a deal with the world's business leaders to benefit from the alien's technology. But the impact is a near takeover of human culture. The Vov enforce new curricula in schools so students learn the Vov's history and language. Their occupation of Earth renders most human jobs obsolete. Families are struggling, and two teenagers, Adam and Chloe, come up with a plan to make some extra cash by doing what Chloe calls courtship broadcasting. Let's listen to a clip. In this scene, Chloe proposes the idea to Adam after a failed attempt at selling used items to their classmates. Here it is.
Hey, you know, we could always consider doing a courtship broadcast.
What?
You know, where you set your notes to broadcast instead of receive, and then they watch you while you go on dates. They actually, like, pay to watch, and they send it straight to your account. You've never heard about this?
Landscape with Invisible Hand is now streaming through Amazon Prime Video, and when writer and director Corey Finley joined me here on All of It, I started by asking what he liked best about the M.T. Anderson novel of the same name, which inspired parts of the film.
So I loved a bunch of things. So you alluded to some of the previous two movies that I'd done, and I tend to be a very restless filmmaker. So when I've spent the 2 or 3 years that it takes to really live in a world and write and direct and edit and release a movie, I'm very eager to move on to something very different. So the last thing I did was Bad Education. It was this sort of based on a true story, true crime story, this very sort of subtle human scale story. And I really wanted to do something just totally wild and something with a strong genre element. And I read this book by M.T. Anderson, and it struck me as really unique and really strange in its premise. And I was very drawn to this idea of essentially a purely economic alien invasion. So a sort of a riff on the alien invasion trope, where instead of being like big, scary, dominating invaders, these aliens are sort of small, comical, annoying bureaucrats, and they take over Earth through the free market. I thought there's something very subversive and funny about that and all the implications of that premise. And it also struck me as very, very hard to film and very hard to visualize in a way that felt like sort of an exciting gauntlet thrown to me as a filmmaker.
You know, M.T. Anderson is known for employing like both this cultural sarcasm and wit in his writing. How did you translate some of those elements into the film?
Yeah, so that was one of the things that most drew me to it, that it had this mix of extremely dark kind of you know, sort of like serious-minded social criticism. It's really about sort of corporate consolidation and colonialism and cultural appropriation and all these kind of thorny topics, but it handles them in this kind of unabashedly sort of ridiculous, silly way. And that really unapologetic collision of the very serious and the very unserious was what drew me to it. And so that was, I don't know if it took a lot of thought or care to sort of preserve that tone, because it was so baked into the material. And then it just became about, you know, working with the actors to find the realism of this crazy story as much as possible.
Can you think of an example that you especially love of where that like seriousness and the silliness kind of clash?
Yeah, I guess I should be loath to give any spoilers, but the first time we kind of meet one of these aliens at about the midpoint of the movie, we want the audience to really feel the reality of this kind of everyday new the new order of the world at sort of a human scale before we show you the aliens behind the curtain. But when they finally meet the alien, there's this scene that it's very, very close to the scene in the book. The scene I really loved, where this really bizarre creature is explaining to these humans how they have they're doing human love incorrectly, and that these are human kids. They experience love. These aliens have no idea what love is, but this particular alien is an expert in human culture, mm-hmm. and assures them that they are faking it. He knows more about human love than they do, and he's going to sue them into oblivion. And I loved the humor and the darkness of that premise.
I'm thinking of that scene right now, and no spoilers, honestly. The design of the alien, I think, is something really to write home about. You've stated that one of your first collaborators to join the project was Eric Jandabore, who supervised the creation of the super pig in Bong Joon-ho's Okja. What sources of inspiration did you have for how the Vuv would look? Because this was really a part of the movie that stood out to me.
Yes. So it was, and to go back to the book again, the creature design was one of the most compelling parts of the book, in that it was very handled in a very literary way. So it was a very vivid but very mysterious and kind of short description of these creatures. We don't get a sort of head, shoulders, knees, and toes anatomical description of these creatures. We're told that they look and feel a little bit like sort of squat, stony coffee tables. And we're told that when they communicate, it sounds like someone walking forcefully in corduroys. So we kept those elements. We want to be very true to those evocative lines of prose. But obviously, that left an enormous amount of room for me and Eric Jandabore, our VFX supervisor, to fill in their anatomy. And we worked for ages because we had COVID delays on this movie. So we had a long opportunity to just iterate and try to develop a design that felt like it didn't draw directly on any of the many kind of alien physical tropes we're used to seeing. We didn't want a little green man or a squid alien or a spider alien or anything like that. But we also wanted that. We wanted the design to be simple and to have almost like kind of a deadpan quality to it as well.
Deadpan is a perfect word for that. Did that bring up any, not just deadpan, but did it bring up any challenges trying to take those pros and applying them visually? And what was something that you really had to find a creative solution for during that design process?
I would say the whole, you know, the whole project of designing them required a creative solution, because we wanted to thread a needle where they felt real and kind of strange and unnerving enough to feel like a threat, but we also didn't want to betray what's so unique about this premise, which is, again, this idea that these are not scary, you know, Ridley Scott's alien style aliens that are coming and could bite our heads off. They need to feel very, very real and like they exert a real power over our society, but they also need to feel kind of annoying in the way that, like, the voice on a customer service call telling you that you're 39th in line to talk to a human is annoying.
I'm talking with Corey Finley about his new movie, Landscape with Invisible Hand, and I'd love to talk about Adam and Chloe for a little bit. These are the two teenagers in the film. Story centers around them. They broadcast their dates to the Vuv. But at some point, like you mentioned, they're told, you're not doing this right. And I don't want to give away too much. But we could talk about why they're so interested in streaming the courtship and why the Vuv are so interested between the humans and what happens when love is faked. Is there a sense of why the Vuv were so interested in that in the first place?
So what Chloe briefly tells Adam, and this is expounded on at greater length in the book, is that the Vuv reproduce by budding. They don't have any romantic love in their culture. They don't have partnerships or human breeding. And so they find human love and really all sort of human emotions very exotic and sort of exciting and different. And I love the idea that in a world where these aliens and their technology do and make everything that humans need so much better than we can on Earth. Mm. The only sort of value that humans can create is by kind of selling their humanness to these aliens. That felt very, very subversive, but also very real to me.
You know, I might be way off on this, but something that I was wondering the whole time watching the movie is there a corollary with AI here? Because they were so deadpan, like you said, and it felt like they just wanted as much as they could about humans, and they were making jobs obsolete, et cetera, et cetera. Is that a conscious decision? Is that something you've heard elsewhere? Am I just making something up?
you're definitely not making something up. I mean, one of the things I love about the way these creatures are conceived is they can stand in for a lot of things. Mm. They can stand in for kind of a cluster of things. Again, there's this sort of colonialist metaphor. The big one for me when we were making the movie is that they're all about kind of corporate consolidation, as I was saying earlier. But yeah, AI has become just a bigger part of our culture in the time since we've made the movie. And I think it's sort of an obvious corollary, these sort of strange creatures and one of the things I really like about kind of the second half of the movie is we get to see the way that maybe like an AI, these creatures don't have existing sort of human prejudices and venalities, but they absorb it through our culture. They're fascinated by human culture, so they end up picking up a lot of the darker aspects of human culture sort of secondhand and projecting that back toward the human race.
And you know what's so wild? And I think this is what makes the movie captivating. You juxtapose that with Adam's character specifically, who cares so much about painting. Painting is a big part of his personality, the way that he expresses himself, and the way the movie expresses itself too. Can you talk to me about how painting came up for you, how you wanted to incorporate that into the movie?
Yeah, absolutely. It's threaded all through the book, and it's a sort of a key part of our main character's life and what he cares about, and something that I very much related to as sort of a nerdy art kid in high school who cared a lot about authenticity and what makes us human and all that kind of thing. And it was a really important part of kind of the visual language of the movie too. If the biggest sort of rock to turn over in the movie was the creature design, the other really big one was the paintings themselves. And we found or worked with an amazing Atlanta-based artist named William Downs, whose artwork I was introduced to shortly before the movie and really fell in love with. He's got a very, very distinctive kind of style and just a wonderful artist. And he created all of Adam's art for the movie. So every time we see Adam's art within the movie, which is sort of a running visual motif, it's William Downs actually painted or drew it. And the artwork was so good that in post, I wanted to incorporate it even more thoroughly in the movie. And we came up with this idea of these kind of chapter headings to sort of highlight some of the unusual structure of the movie. And we superimpose the chapter headings over different pieces that William created after the movie as well.
I wanted to ask you about that. Why did you want to use that visual device to break up the movie with painting specifically?
Well, I always have a weird love since childhood of chapter headings. I had them in my first movie too, and I don't know. There's a certain excitement when you close out a section and you're heading into a new section and you're greeted with sort of some piece of text that will mean something different by the time you've seen the next chapter. Mm. And then with this movie too, I really wanted the structure to feel kind of novelistic in a way, meaning not as much of a kind of standard three-act sort of rising action, falling action structure as you will typically get, particularly in science fiction movies that are often kind of a hero's journey type story. Mm. This is trying to be a sort of unusual story, and we wanted to have a little bit of an unusual structure too, and to kind of follow the kind of slightly meandering but ultimately coming together structure of the novella on which it's based.
And I want to listen to another clip. In this scene, Adam is having a conversation with his sister Natalie, played by Brooklyn McKenzie, while painting before a Vuv city, like a physical city in the sky, blocks his entire view. Let's listen to it.
Mom looked upset. Did something happen while you guys were out job hunting?
She's just tired.
Did she find anything?
She will. Now, plant your vegetables. I'm trying to focus. You're kidding me.
I thought this one was heading east.
Yeah, I think it's a different one.
Hey, park somewhere else!
One of the elements that really drove that scene home for me, besides the stunning visual effects, was just the relationship between these two actors. And that entire family, the Campbells, was so gripping. For this film, black actors were casted as the Campbells. However, these characters could have been played by anyone. So I was wondering how race factors into the relationship between the Campbells and the world that they're living in.
Yeah. Well, so to be honest, that decision started with just my love for particular actors. Mm. So Tiffany Haddish, who plays Beth Campbell, the mother of this family, is an actress I've been wanting to work with since I saw her in Girls Trip many years ago. Just I'm really drawn to a certain kind of comedian, and I think actors that start with a sort of comic base can often give these really great and sort of surprising dramatic performances. And I certainly am biased, but I think that's what she does in this movie. And then Asante Black, who plays Adam, our lead, really. He was fantastic in Ava DuVernay's Netflix limited series, When They See Us. As a director, whenever I see an actor just jumps off the screen for me in the way that both of them did in those projects, I just file them away in my internal Rolodex of people that I really, really want to work with. And I think having it be a black family at the center of the story leads to some interesting additional layers with Chloe's family who move into their basement in the second half of the story. And I don't want to go too deep into spoiler territory there, but I think it just adds to the to some of the dynamics in the book.
It was so funny to see how the families adjusted themselves to try to appeal in certain ways to the different forces during the movie. One way is that the Veuve seemed to have romanticized this 1950s American aesthetic from television. Why do you think the Veuve were so obsessed with this era?
Well, the book goes even more deeply into this question and talks about how the Veuve started watching humans in the 50s. And there's a brief allusion to this as well. And there's something in the movie as well. And there's something fun about the idea that when alien imagery started appearing all over our popular culture in forms of flying saucers and, again, those first sort of little green men images and that kind of thing, that was when the Veuve secretly began observing us. And then the interesting other side of that is the idea that because that's the first form of the first version of humanity that the Veuve encountered in the 50s, they have this kind of fixed idea of what humanity is just based on what they first saw. And you know, there's an interesting idea about sort of tourism, colonialism there. I thought that was very interesting and certainly speaks to a lot of 50s nostalgia that all different parts of our current culture are wrapped up in as well.
That was my conversation with Corey Finley, the writer and director of the sci-fi film Landscape with Invisible Hand. Up next, we'll investigate the inner workings of telemarketing scam companies. Directors Adam Lowe and Sam Lipman-Stern join us to talk about their new HBO docuseries, Telemarketers. Great conversation. That's next. This is All of It.